Well.
Hello.
Who's a smug bunt with a new cookbook out?
Who's a smug bunt with a bestseller? Sales has arrived at my house, you know, hot on the heels of her, you know, sellout tour. People are roaming the streets in search of copies of her book. This is just, it's actually galling to tell you the truth because, like, you have completely smashed all sales targets with your sales.
It's been
book.
People have been so incredibly lovely, and met lots of lovely chatters at events. I've been travelling for the past 2 weeks all around the country. Your mum and dad came to my Adelaide event.
I told them to razz you a bit. I'm not sure if that happened.
I spotted them sort of halfway through my talk. It was nice.
I was very worried about you on this book tour, I must say. Of course, as I'm sure all of you are clutching a copy of Sales' book Any Ordinary Day right now. You'll be familiar with the subject area. It's a very personal book. I was really worried about you. You sort of went from not really talking about all this stuff to just talking about it on a stage in a day in, day out. I worried that you were going to crumple under the emotional pressure.
Do you know what? Funnily enough, the more I talked about it, the easier. It sort of likes to get a bit desensitized. But I did also realize that some days would be easier than others. Like it just comes and goes. So I had to be prepared that just because I'd been all right one day didn't mean I'd be fine the next.
Yeah.
The other thing that was fantastic was that I was really worried at the signings that people might come up and sort of blindside me by saying, oh, this horrible thing happened to me. We're at Crab's house, so we've got the
hello
aircraft noise.
Obligatory interruption. Also, just to be warned, Sales has just mentioned to me that at some point during this podcast, Shane Warne might ring her, in which case she has to go and build rapport with him because they're having an encounter tomorrow night.
We're going to stop rolling when Warney rings me.
My eyes are going to start rolling, though, as you pretend to be interested in cricket.
Hi, Shane. No, but people actually didn't do that to me. And it's not like that I don't care about hearing things like that. It's just that when you're meeting hundreds of people telling you about horrible things that happened would have been awful.
You just want to start crying again.
Totally. Yeah. But you know what? I'm just so absolutely sick of talking about myself and my book. I would really much prefer to talk about your book. If you want to buy my book, go and have a look on Booktopia or go to your local independent bookstore, Any Ordinary Day it's called. Now, your book.
My book.
Special guest. So, okay, what I want to know firstly, what's the difference between special – oh, here it is. I can have
it
a
is.
Little
Sorry,
sip.
I should have
What's the
one
difference
too.
Between special delivery and special guest
I
in was, terms of
special
the
Special delivery is the book that I wrote a few years back with my best mate from growing up on the Adelaide Plains, Wendy Sharp, cook of genius, lovely person, currently living in London. And that was all about food that you can take to your friends' houses. You know, mm-hmm. It's always nice to bring a plate, how to – sensitively take food to people who are happy or sad or, knocked up or just had a baby or whatever. And this book, Special Guest, is about entertaining people in your own home. Now, as you know, Sales, I'm a ferociously messy person. So, like, I reckon my number one bar from inviting people around, like, for dinner or whatever is just like, oh, geez, I have to clean off the dining room table because look at my dining room table.
Yep.
That's under a giant pile.
I'm going to take a photo of that later to
and
post.
And kids' stuff and things that I'm really meaning to put away but haven't yet. Like, I'm a shocker. And I just can't bear the work involved. But I love having people over and I find that if people are just around at my house because they're like picking up children or dropping off children or picking up something or other or whatever, then I really like to just say, well, why don't you stick around? Like I'll just cook something, you know, and then there's no pressure. Nobody's really expecting a big three-course wingding. There's kids zooming around, you know. And if you produce anything even halfway decent on the, turn of a coin – like that, then everybody's happy. You know, your guests are happy because they're like, oh, that was actually pretty nice. You're happy because you're like, oh, I didn't even worry about tidying because they were already here.
Perfect.
So one of the chapters in this book is called Stay for Lunch and it's got just recipes that'll take you 20 minutes to make with general like common pantry items. I just love to say pantry items. It's one of my favourite phrases. and so that's one of the ideas. Okay. Another idea, so every chapter in the book is an idea of how to cook for your friends that isn't a sort of three-course dinner nightmare.
Right.
And another one is how have people over for breakfast. cook a delicious breakfast, have them out the door by 11, and then, you know, you're on your way.
Which is good too, and means you can be in bed by 9 p.m. No problem.
Exactly.
At all.
It's not the danger end of the day.
See,
for
I'm
you.
Looking at, I'm reading Stay for Lunch while you're chatting. Yep. Of course, you're going to just be able to talk pretty much uninterrupted because I'm going to get completely absorbed in the book. Now, see, literally, you could literally do this, I think, if people just walked in and wanted to stay, because it's frozen peas, eggs, sour cream, bit of lemon zest, bit of chili flakes, bit of olive oil, mint, and then pretty much whatever cheese is lying around.
Yep.
Easy as.
Yep. The other one that we've – another idea we've got in the book is afternoon tea. Bring back afternoon tea, like proper afternoon tea.
I salute you.
And the great thing about afternoon tea is that you can, like, spend a bit of time making a cake that's, like, really lovely, or, like, a big sort of tray bake sort of a cake or a slice or something like that, and just serve that and cups of tea or, yep. you know, a glass of champagne or whatever, because – that way you've put a lot of energy into something, but you're not faffing about with 100 different, you know, finger sandwiches and mini quiches and whatever. You're just doing one thing and doing it well, which is kind of paring back on the anxiety of sort of full-scale entertaining.
And also, who doesn't love afternoon tea?
Like, exactly.
Everybody loves afternoon
That's
tea.
True.
Okay, so I've flipped to that section. Yeah. Passion fruit curd meringue cake. You have served that to me and it was just beyond delicious.
Yeah.
Did you sieve out the seeds? From the
Oh yeah, I do, because I don't love a crunchy bit in the passion fruit. So I've got with the passion fruit curd, I always sieve out the seeds. But look, others will differ, and so you know, it certainly looks lovely with the seeds in there. But
do you know,
how
my favourite thing is looking at your recipes and going, well, you know what, I could do that, and I could whack in a bit of blah blah blah.
Oh, God, you
should see her face, the look of hatred that she just directed
at
me,
interfere.
Just looking at that passion fruit curd meringue
Need
cake.
Some seeds. Be better with seeds, wouldn't
all
it?
All over the top. I think I would just open a fresh passion fruit and just tip it all over the top.
This is why you're getting Mark Latham's cookbook for Christmas.
Excuse me, I've already got Mark Latham's cookbook.
It's true, we've both got it because somebody gave it to us as a joke, and I really hope they shoplifted it because I don't love the idea of proceeds going to either of those gentlemen.
Oh, man. Oh, you've Although, got a bunt cake. There's a smug bunt in here.
Of course, there's a bunt
cherry
in there.
Cherry ricotta bunt
you,
cake.
Love.
That looks great.
But the other thing that often makes people, I reckon, these days anxious about entertaining is because they reckon, people at our stage of life, I guess, who've got young children, you know, you invite six people that you really want to like have dinner with, and then they come with like a dozen children. So like instead, basically you're putting on a kid's birthday party, you know?
Yeah.
So one genius idea that Wendy has had is invite people with kids to bring their kids and come at like adult dinner o'clock, like 7 o'clock, feed their kids before they come.
Oh, yeah.
And then you provide a brilliant dessert for the kids.
Oh, yeah.
And so they bog in, eat the dessert, and then you set up a movie or something for them to do or entertain themselves in some way while grown-ups have dinner. It's a good way of sort of scheduling things, and it means you're not like running around doing like an extra kids' meal where you're going like, well, my kid doesn't eat anything except for, you know, yogurt.
Perfect.
And,
yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
That's an excellent idea.
It is a good idea. We've also got there's a chapter of things that you can make ahead, which is like really useful, I reckon, because if all you have to do when people get there is just stick something in the oven, it's pretty great.
Totally agree. And also I like chopping up lots of little things and having a heap of little bowls.
Love.
So the pre-prepping is good.
Yeah.
So what about this? Pudding club.
Pudding club.
Hang on. Just because 9 p.m. is the best time to catch up. What?
Yeah.
So I guess
I'm not saying every bit of this book's going to appeal to you.
Guess I'm not going to be in your pudding club then. Oh, I might have to make an exception now that I've seen the photograph
of
the apricot cobbler.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got crack in here.
Yeah, got crack in there.
Oh, that's so
crack.
Good. So with what is the process by which you and Wendy, given that she lives in London, come up with the recipes?
Well, we do about half each. All the really good ones are Wendy's. She's really like an incredibly innovative cook. Like she just experiments with weird different flavours, and they're the sort of things you read about and you go, really, Wendy, you think that's going to work? Like an example in the breakfast section.
Is it the Vegemite mustard?
Yeah.
And yeah, I just
right.
saw that before.
So
yeah.
There's crumpets with a spread that is composed of butter, Vegemite, and mustard mashed up with like there's parsley or chives or something in there as well.
Yeah,
as I
saw it before and it certainly
and
did catch my eye.
And I just said, look, that just sounds like a train accident, mate. Like it sounds hideous. But she stuck by her guns and she made it for me when we were shooting the cookbook. And it's, oh my God, off the charts delicious.
Really?
Like just insanely delicious, yeah.
So it's actually, it's mostly, well, so 100 grams of unsalted butter, two teaspoons of Vegemite, 4 teaspoons of English mustard, and it's flat leaf parsley is the herb. Mm. So is it, how much are you tasting the Vegemite? Is it mostly
taste it.
Do you?
Yeah. Okay. It's just this sort of savouriness, a sort of umami, I guess. It's just, oh, my God, I'll make it for you. It's delicious.
That sounds good.
The thing is, I find it impossible to dislike a crumpet. I don't think I've ever had a bad crumpet.
Is there any – hang on, we'll come back in a minute to how you and Wendy worked it out, but is there any tinned tuna in this book?
I don't think there is,
and allow
actually.
Me to look in the index to see if capers appear.
Oh, there's billions of capers, mate. Everything that I make has capers in it.
Okay, so you do half the recipes each.
While you're at the index, just have a look because one of Wendy's geniuses is the novelty index. And last time we had an index of occasions, like where you could look up what the circumstances were. My friend is sick. I want to take something. Here's some things that are appropriate for that.
Right.
My friend is depressed. Do not take a depressed person a salad that has to be composed and eaten immediately because that depressed person will leave that salad in the fridge and every time she opens it, there'll be that salad going off and she'll feel even worse. So take that person some nuts or something, you know. But this time the specialty index is by dietary requirement, right?
That's great.
So if you've got, as in modern times you often do, 5 people coming around, one's vegan, one's halal, one's, you know, pescatarian and one's a celiac person, then you can have a look at the back of the book and find the recipes that will work for you or can be adapted for you. And there's another chapter about feasts, which is a bunch of dishes where you sort of put out a selection of stuff and you can grab what suits you in a dietary
sense. I saw you the other day on the Facebook group put some photos of a poke bowl up.
Oh, the poke bowl buffet, yes.
Oh, that's
great. Choose your own adventure, which is very good because I think sometimes people who have, I mean, particularly celiac people or vegans can feel a bit lonely at a feast because they're like, well, here's what everyone else is having. You're having a carrot.
Yeah. And I think knowing from my friends who are in that position, I think sometimes they feel like, oh, I'm being a pain because I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah. Whereas if you've got, you know, a ton of options here that you can just look at and go, yep, you know what? I've got, like, I'm just looking at the gluten-free section. There's at least 50, if not more, recipes that are gluten-free.
Yeah, and you can adapt things as well. And in most of the recipes, we've got like little hacks to make them either even easier or make them suitable for any of those dietary groups. And I think that sometimes it's nice for people who are in that situation, particularly vegans and celiacs, who are often sort of, you know, the most intimidating guests to cook for if people are omnivores. Sometimes you can actually choose something quite imaginative that happens to be vegan and just give it to everybody.
Yeah.
And then that person for once doesn't feel like the left out person. And like there's a great Vietnamese dish called bánh rào, which I've got a recipe for in there, which is this beautiful, crispy, sunny, golden pancake. And you look at it and you think, well, there's an egg in there or something because it's bright yellow. But actually, it's made out of rice flour and coconut milk and turmeric.
Oh, yum.
It's a batter that you have to – you make it and then leave it for a little bit and then you fry it in the pan like a crepe and then you fold it over and fill it with like lots of herbs and bean sprouts and you can put tofu or prawns or egg or noodles or, you know, anything you want in there. It's colourful and crunchy and then the way you eat it is you slice it into slices, wrap it in lettuce leaves and dip it in that nook chum sauce.
Yum.
My God, it's so delicious. And it looks beautiful and it's people can kind of get into it and roll their own and
as
everybody
you say,
feels
then it,
kind
then
of
it doesn't become like a, okay, this is blah, blah, blah. Bob, here's the vegan dish, you know. I noticed as well, like I often will realise, oh, I've cooked a vegetarian meal without even thinking about it, particularly because there's so many hearty things in community and family that we like, neighbourhood, that it's very
Hedy McKinnon's
easy to do.
Books.
Also, I'm always really struck when I see your cookbooks at the quality of the photography and the styling. It's amazing. Who does that?
Well, the Photographer Rob was just like an absolute joy to work with over special delivery as well. We remembered him from last time and we were lucky enough to secure him again this time. Mm-hmm. He's based in Sydney, Rob Palmer, his name is, and he's a this is what he does. And we had a really great team as well of we had someone helping with just sort of preparing ingredients and stuff. It was like the most fun couple of weeks to shoot it. You've dropped in on one of these shoots. You know what it's like. It's awesome. Yeah. There is something about cooking your normal food and then having it kind of styled and then having it beautifully photographed, which is just like, you feel like you're cheating a bit because you're like, oh, it's my normal gungi food, but it just looks unbelievably amazing.
It looks incredible, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a really fun process. But, like, it's amazing how light and background make an incredible difference. Like, it's like some of the scenarios that have been photographed were actually, like, built with wallpaper and kind of windows, and so it looks like the dish is sitting next to an open window with a like beautiful shrubbery outside. And actually, Rob and our stylist Vanessa Austin built it kind of just for that shot with perfect lighting, and we borrowed all of these fabulous wallpapers from a designer called Emily Ziz, who, you know, I want her to wallpaper my life. So it's actually a real treat just to kind of see your food become beautiful.
It looks fantastic. It
does feel like cheating because I just think, well, at my house it still looks pretty gungy, but, you know.
But it all tastes good. The skill with that, I was thinking about it with because there was a magazine photo taken of me by a guy called Peter Brew Baker for the Good Weekend just before my book came out, and your five-year-old, who's used to seeing me slop in looking like I look today, like the robber's dog, could not recognize
it
as me.
So funny.
It was hilarious.
Who is it? Is it Gwen?
And I'm like sort of posing like with the sort of, you know, come hithery sort of look, I'll give you a hint, Katie. And she's like, nah, still can't get it. That's what, yeah. So your food's the same. I'm like, hang on, I've never seen that food ever before in my life. And you're like, yes, you have. I've served it to you last week.
That said, that awesome. When you cook it according to the directions, it will look that beautiful, right? Still
now,
tastes good.
If people want to come and see you and get a book signed and stuff, are you going to be schlepping around the place?
Yeah, I am going all over.
And how can people find out about that? Look at the publisher's website or follow you on Twitter or something?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter and I'll say where I'm going. We're going to kind of like local bookstores and stuff around Australia. I think I'm going to Brisbane, lots of things in Sydney, Melbourne, Hobart, Perth, Adelaide. I'm getting around.
Speaking of Melbourne, reminds me we've got a live show in Melbourne in mid-November.
I know, November the 16th.
The demand was so high, we've opened a second tier of seating, which is further from the stage, so we've dropped the price.
Yeah.
So, but
it's the nosebleed seats.
Yes.
Bring a tinny.
Exactly.
To chuck at sales.
So if people want to get tickets to that, do they go to our website or how do they actually just Google Chat 10 Looks 3 Melbourne?
It's Ticketek.
Ticketek.
Handling it. And there's 2,500, I think.
$25 to just watch us bullshitting on stage. No, I mean, it's money well spent.
What we should do is live cast our panic attack backstage every time where we go, do people know that we just sit on stage and talk? Oh, God. We suck. Even if you are in the nosebleeds, hey, come along a bit early because we've got this pop-up bar happening, which will be awesome. And we've had a bit of a competition to name that over the last few weeks. And, God, they're so funny, their suggestions. And we eventually went with an absolutely brilliant suggestion from who was it that suggested this one? Claire McKinnon, I think it was. The Barmaid's Tale.
So good.
It just made me laugh so much.
So good. That was awesome. And thank you, everyone, because there was hundreds of suggestions. Hey, just in a perfect stroke of timing for you to ensure that from about the middle of next week, every time I ring you, you'll be stress crying.
Yeah.
You've managed simultaneously with launching your new cookbook to also launch a new television show.
Well played. I'm an idiot.
Yeah. the show? What's it called?
It's called Tomorrow Tonight. Look, I'm absurdly pleased with it, actually, because I've never worked with Charlie Pickering before, and, you know, he's a sort of big star. So I was thinking, I wonder if he's going to be one of these, you know, don't make eye contact. Like, only contact me through my agent people. But he's like just such a great guy. He's really lovely, very genuine, super smart. And I've always liked his comedy because I think that he always tries to achieve a purpose. Like, he just is a useful guy, I think. He's very smart and principled and very funny. And the idea of this new show, when he rang me about a year ago, I'm like, that sounds amazing if it works, and if it doesn't, it would be a disaster because it's just really complicated.
So what's the premise?
So the premise is each show, Charlie is the host, I'm the co-host, and we have three other people on a panel who are experts and a comedian, and we plunge them, well, I'm plunged too because Charlie knows what's going on and I don't really, into a scenario that is made up but not implausible, right? So most of them are about technological developments that suddenly create all of these moral conundrums. Well, technology now exists to do X. Should we do X? Would you do X? Or a geopolitical kind of situation arises.
Right.
And we create the scenario with all of these really lifelike looking news inserts and packages and contributions from social media. It's like the thing is actually happening. Mm-hmm. And the story rolls along, and as it rolls along, more and more of these moral decisions come up to be made. And we're asking people on the panel who are actually experts in the field that it's that the story is involved with to give us their opinion on what should now happen or what they would personally do. And it's just been we've made two now, and it's just fascinating to see the way people's minds work and about how they change their minds as the story mutates and throws up a different sort
and
of conundrum.
Is it an hour or half an
it's
hour?
It's half an hour.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, actually.
So it's really like snappy.
It. Yeah.
But it's like it's really good to watch the audience too because it's shot in front of a live audience, and so they kind of stumble out of there just thinking, oh, my God, like I never, you know, it's quite scary sometimes.
I was going to say, is it disturbing? Like, do you come out feeling rattled?
Well, it's interesting because some of the people who leave the audience have said that they thought that the news packages were real.
Oh.
Yeah. Like they were like, were they real or not?
Is it going to be like a War of the Worlds style scenario?
I don't think so because it's quite
freak out the populace.
You know, it's really funny as well. Like we've it's quite a good balance because you learn a lot from it,
right?
And we've got some really interesting guests who I won't name because it might stop it from happening. but it's funny too. So you can tell that it's an entertainment show. It's not kind of – it doesn't look like you've accidentally tuned into News 24 and this thing is actually happening. But it's really good – it's a really good brain exercise just for rehearsing in your mind how you would deal with these situations. Because I often think that we, over the course of our lives, we develop this sort of settled idea of, oh, yes, I'm pro this and I'm anti that. Oh, yes, of course I'm pro free speech. Or, yes, of course I'm, you know – pro individual freedom. But then when you get put into a situation where that attitude actually causes harm to someone or could be threatening to the population at large or could land you personally into a very awkward situation, that's when you have to rethink those assumptions. And that's what we're asking people to do without notice, live.
That sounds great. That sounds it's really engaging.
My main sort of concern with the whole idea initially was like, well, you know, what if people don't take it seriously? What if they just are sort of like, or what if they're too shy to be honest about what actually they would do? And actually people have just slipped straight into it, you know. It's just – and they get very quickly engaged in the mental and moral gymnastics of what's going on. Yeah.
Excellent.
That it's going to be great, I think.
Good.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I think that we might wrap it up. And
God, I just need to go and have a warm bath. That we've been talking about me for half an hour with a bit of you.
Well, as payback, you're going to cook me some biscuits now anyway. So,
it's fine.
Bye.